and should have been prisoners of war. What I'm interested in is how the administration is going to look at a lot of the prisoners held in Guantanamo who were with the Taliban in some way. They were either fighting with them or supporting them in other ways in Afghanistan. These are people who were not Afghans. And whether they're going to concede, finally, that these people were soldiers, or whether they're going to insist that because there were cases where they were at camps where Osama bin Laden came and gave them a talk every now and then, that makes them al-Qaeda. It's always been a lie that the majority of the prisoners were involved in terrorism in any way, I believe. And, you know, I'm hoping that what this is going to do, and I'm hoping that the hysteria at present is going to die down, is that we are going to address that issue and we're going to say, hey, we've been holding soldiers for all this time and we didn't give them the rights that we should. The conflict's coming to an end. They've got to go home.
We're going to leave it there, but we're going to pick up this conversation next week. Andy Worthington, British journalist who recently wrote the piece Missing the Point on the Guantanamo Taliban Prisoner Swap and the release of Bo Bergdahl. His book is called Guantanamo Files, and we'll link to the article at democracynow.org. And thanks so much, Frank Goldsmith, for joining us representing one of the prisoners, Khairulla Harqua, who is now in Qatar. That does it for the broadcast. Our website is democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Berkenet, Balzar Amato, Nirmi Shakes, Steve Martinez, and Malcolm.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. Please stay tuned as SW Concert hosts Positively Revolting just right after this.
Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Voices on the Ground, Resistance and Resilience, Friday and Saturday, June 6th and 7th at Portland State University. The keynote speaker will be Sherry Hunkala, a national activist in anti-poverty movements and co-founder of the Kensington Welfare Rights Union and the Poor People's Economic Human Rights. This two-day conference will focus on areas of human rights, criminalization, and pathologizing of identities and experiences, revolutionary tools, and more. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Sex Workers film series. June 7th at 7 p.m. will show Meet the Falkins. Louise and Martine Falkins are identical twins. For over 50 years, they were working as prostitutes. They freed themselves from the control of their pimps, ran their own brothel, and set up the first informal trade union for prostitutes. Meet the Falkins is a portrait of these women. Again, that's June 7th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Hip hooray! Hip hooray! Say, there's a great man here with us today. Though his back is bowed and his legs are bent, why, he broke all records wherever he went, from the Indies to the Andes in his undies. And he never took a shave except on Mondays. He didn't eat a thing but chocolate sundaes.
Was a very, very daring thing to do.
Well, sir, he carried for a charm some Gifford herring.
A herring?
To protect him when the tropic sun was glaring. Yeah.
And good morning. Thanks for joining us on KBOO. That music you just heard is From the Indies to the Andes in His Undies by the Hoosier Hotshots. You might have caught the line, and he went without a copyright permission. 'Twas a very, very daring thing to do. Well, I'm SW Conser, and I'm stepping in today for Ani and Lynn, your regular hosts of Positively Revolting Talk Radio, while they both enjoy a well-deserved vacation. Today we have two guests in the studio, live in the studio, and we'll be talking about copyrights and negotiations and other daring things. We're looking forward to taking your calls about surviving in this new economy of ours as a freelance creative or other non-traditional worker. So our guest, Katie Lane, is a local attorney and writer. She does negotiation for a living, and she has a blog called workmadeforhire.net. Katie, welcome to KBOO.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
And also in the studio this morning, I'd like to welcome back Cole Haver. Cole is a local copyright attorney. He's all about helping people understand fair use and also how to protect their own work. His website is artcop.com. Cole, great to see you again.
Nice to see you, Conch, too.
Now, we will be taking calls this hour from listeners. The studio number, as always, is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. But before we get going, a little tiny disclaimer. Yes, Katie and Cole are both attorneys, but what you hear on the air today will be personal opinions, not legal advice. If you're looking for a consultation, there are some great firms around that can set up an appointment for you.
Absolutely.
And Katie and Cole know about many of them.
There's also the Oregon Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts, which is a great organization if you are an artist or a nonprofit. They have clinics on a monthly basis. If you meet a certain income level restriction, you can sign up and get a 45-minute consultation with an attorney. Costs, I think it's a $20 administrative fee. But OregonVLA.org is where you could go to check out everything they have to offer.
Well, that's great. I haven't heard of them. I actually did consult a lawyer last year, and the consultation was free initially. Mm-hmm. And then he charged me a really great little, not his normal rate. Uh-huh. And that was because I think he liked my case, but also because, you know, I was kind of doing a lot of the legwork, and, you know, that works out pretty well. Yeah, you know. Let me start out with a quote that I saw recently, and this may have even been on the Work Made for Hire blog. It said something along the lines of, "Everybody wants legal advice, but nobody wants to talk to a lawyer."
I saw that the other day. There was a
Yeah. Personally, I have trouble understanding that attitude. Maybe it's because I've met so many great attorneys here in Portland, folks who fight for the rights of tenants, for example, people from the National Lawyers Guild who've defended protesters and won judgments in police abuse cases. But still, yeah, there seems to be that lingering wariness about lawyers. It's an attitude I think should be reserved for, say, cable company executives or pharmaceutical lobbyists.
Well, I think if you don't interact with a lawyer very often, if you don't know them, if you don't realize that we are normal, goofy people that have, you know, the same sort of silly interests that you do, you might think that we're difficult to talk to. And some lawyers don't do a great job of talking to their clients in normal, easy to understand language. So I can understand not wanting to talk to a lawyer who doesn't get it. But there are luckily, especially here in Portland, a lot of lawyers that do.
And I should mention a personal aside here. I first met Cole and Katie delivering these amazing legal workshops at the late lamented Stumptown Comics Fest. They were always entertaining and informative events. I would look around this room full of artists and writers and see how much of a need there were for these skills that you were teaching. And do you still have these? I know you had these handouts, Cole. Do you have these on your blog, maybe, like an electronic version of these handouts about fair use and copyright and protections and things?
I think you can probably find some of those handouts on my – I'm not a web person. I'm at the mercy of somebody who is. But you can find those things on the Art Cop website, and you can find mm-hmm. it – there's a lot of good stuff online now.
What are some of your favorite sites for folks? Where do you usually point them?
Oh, dear. Favorite sites for fair use
or copyright information in general. I know Stanford's Copyright Center has a lot of really good information that's relatively easy to understand, also to find.
The Electronic Frontier Foundation, mm-hmm. EFF, has some really good information. You can find some fun stuff on Negative Land site.
Yeah.
Always.
Yeah, we've been playing some negative. Actually, people who were up late last night listening to KBOO might have heard some Negative Land. But yes, they're fun. And they love KBOO too, by the way.
Yeah, and they've been here.
Yes, they have.
They've been here and they've been in town. Trademark Gunderson is a good place to, good guy to look up.
I should mention, you know, that KBOO, Cole, you've worked with musicians and performers of all stripes, including doing some work with Firesign Theater, if memory serves.
That's true. I helped them with their last box set.
And you, so you know quite a bit about the way that the law has adapted in artists who use transformative versions of material that's out there already. They take a material that's in, you know, not necessarily in the public domain, but they take work that's been copyrighted and they transform it and make something new out of it.
It's a really complicated conversation. But part of the copyright law, in fact, part of the copyright law that talks about your rights is Section 106. Section 107 is the fair use law. And fair use law talks about certain times that it's okay to take somebody else's work under certain conditions. And if you don't take more than you need, in America, we have a balancing of the monopoly, the control rights that you have as a copyright owner versus free speech and the right to comment and the right to talk about stuff that's out there. And that's a built-in feature of the law that we should not ignore.
Absolutely. And I think it's important in realizing that that's what creates a creative community. That's one of the things that contributes to the creation of not only more art, but a better community when we are able to play off of one another and say, oh, I see what you did there. What do you think of this?
Well, one of the ironies that I heard, and there was a documentary a little while ago. It was called RIP, A Remix Manifesto. And it pointed out that the Disney's first talkie, which is called Steamboat Willie, was kind of a takeoff on Steamboat Bill Jr. Mm-hmm. and even used some of, now I'm forgetting the actor director's name of Steamboat Bill Jr.
Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton used like the music from his movie. And the irony, of course, now is that we keep extending the copyright laws out further and further because to protect Disney when he was ripping other artists off all the time as a young guy.
And I would say probably continues to. most of the Disney films are riffs on material that's already out there. Mm-hmm. But what Disney does in a grand sense is takes a story that's out in common and they make their version of it. And in the same way, you're entitled to do the same.
Well, you know, I'm interested in, one of the things I'm interested in, and Katie, this is kind of your purview, is sort of empowering artists and making sure that they get the best deal, the best negotiation with clients, which gets to be a harder and harder thing nowadays. I mean, one thing that I've noticed, if you're a contractor these days, unless you're a plumber or electrician, you often find yourself competing for work in an international marketplace. It's very advantageous for clients who can drive down the rates you charge, but not always a good deal for the person looking for a gig.
Right. Well, one of the things that you end up having to do as an independent creator is identify for your clients why you are the better choice. And price is not always the determinant factor, right? It probably shouldn't be. If you want something done well, you need to find the person who can do it the very best.
Well, a lot of clients want somebody who can do something well, but they want it at the rates of somebody who's kind of a hack.
Absolutely. But that's why you engage in conversations with those clients and say, okay, you know, if you're going to focus on price, this is what you can't have. This is what's not going to be available. A lot of what I do in working with artists and freelancers and teaching them about negotiation, it's really teaching them how to have direct conversations and how to be forward about the fact, okay, you can make that choice. That's your prerogative. But if you do, these are the things that will happen. These are the consequences. And you're not going to be able to get the quality or perhaps the scope of work that you're most interested in.
One of the things that I saw on your blog that was really interesting, and I'm hoping I'm going to say this right, is that you tell people, well, you know, in negotiation, it's not about, it's not like when you're selling a car or something and you're coming up from one price going down to another, meeting in the middle, but it's about what do you really want and what does each party want, and to see if you can come to an agreement that gets you both what you really want deep down.
Absolutely. You can fight over positions, and basically you're starting with a number and you're cutting it in half until both of you are mostly, you know, unhappy but willing to move forward. Whereas when you negotiate based on your interest, why it is you want what you want, why that position is important to you, you have a whole lot more information available to use to structure a solution. And I think of negotiation as creative problem solving. You have a problem. They need work. You you need to be able to provide work because you need money. So how is it that you can fix the shared problem in a way that is beneficial to both of you? If you start looking at it that way, it's a much more collaborative event, and you can benefit from, you know, all of those reasons behind why people want what they want. But you're only going to get there if you ask questions. You're only going to get there if you listen. You're only going to get there if you're willing to avoid assuming that you already understand why they want what they want.
And as a creative person, you have to remember that your talent is really what they're after. And so going back to your car, it's not just a car that you can buy this car, you buy this car. The car that you're selling is a very unique car with very unique qualities and very unique talents. And
there
when you're
flames and fins.
And when you're a creative person and somebody is negotiating with you and the focus that they seem to be bringing is about price, it's not about price. It's about the skill and the talent that you're going to bring to this deal mm-hmm. that nobody else can. And keep the focus on something other than $5 or $6. Keep it about what you're going
to
bring.
If you notice somebody really hitting hard on price, you need to direct their attention towards the qualities that they're actually looking for in the work. If they're looking for a professional, well-done work delivered on time that exhibits the kind of talent that you have, your personal talent, stop talking to them about money. You can say, all right, that's great. If you're going to focus on that, you're not going to get these things.
Well, you're listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm SW Conser, filling in today for Lynn and Ani. And my guests here in the studio are Cole Haver and Katie Lane. We are talking about, the new economy where not so many employees, like a lot of contractors, a lot of freelancers, and we're here to take your calls. If you're wanting to call in, talk to Katie and Cole. The number is 503-231-8187. That's 503-231-8187. And what you two were just saying, it reminds me, one of the things that I've noticed is that as an artist, as a contractor, I find myself having to educate clients a lot. So it's not just when you're talking on your blog, you're educating artists, but I've found, there's just, it's crazy that there's some things that people just don't realize about the work that people do for a living, day in, day out. There's if people Google Craig's Pissed, there's one of this immortal post on Craigslist that was up about 6 or 7 years ago and then it was taken down, was removed. But it's just one of my favorites. And I'm just going to read a little excerpt from it where this guy says, it got circulated, so it's all over the place now, but it says, in this country, there are almost twice as many neurosurgeons as there are professional illustrators. There are 11 times as many certified mechanics. There are 70 times as many people in the IT field. So given that they are less rare and therefore less in demand, would it make sense to ask your mechanic to work on your car for free? Would you look him in the eye with a straight face and tell him that his compensation would be the ability to have his work shown to others as you drive down the street? Would you offer a neurosurgeon the opportunity to add your name to his resume as payment for removing that pesky tumor? Maybe you could offer him a few bucks for material? What a deal. Would you be able to seriously even consider offering your web hosting service the chance to have people see their work by viewing your website as their payment for hosting you? This is something that comes up all the time. There's a Twitter feed that I think is the coin of exposure or something like
it's
that.
It's for exposure_text. Yeah, yes. It's great. And basically it's Ryan Estrada, who is a traveling cartoonist. And he goes through and he takes samples of posts where people are asking for free work. And he highlights just how ridiculous it is to be asking for free work. Like there was one yesterday or a couple days ago where somebody was saying, don't worry, it's not a whole lot of work. It's not going to be too intense. It's just an 8-hour day, which is ridiculous. Why would you ask somebody to work a full day without pay? Why, for the joy of working? No, not at all. I think one of the things that you especially have to do as an artist or as a creative person is to remind the person that you're involved in a business transaction. If we're involved in a friendly or collaborative or creative transaction, different rules might apply. But we're involved in a business transaction. And in business, people pay for work. It's very easy for somebody to see an individual working for themselves only as an individual instead of as somebody, an entrepreneur. We treat entrepreneurs so much better than we treat independent creatives.
Oh, they deserve billions.
So, you know what? Start calling yourself an entrepreneur. You are. You are a creative entrepreneur. And you can say to the person, you know what? As an entrepreneur, I just can't accept that. And watch their attitude change. A lot of it is about putting it in context for somebody and helping them see you as somebody who's doing good work and working for yourself.
Well, here's something that I find important more and more as time goes by, which is that, strangely enough, some of these people who put out these crazy Craigslist posts saying, this is great exposure, they get people who, and I've talked to people who are actually very talented, you know, very, experienced people who actually will just take this work. And it's not even for a friend, it's for a stranger. And, okay, I say to people, when you're doing this, when you're caving in, it's not just you that's getting the short end of the stick,
right?
But everybody, you know,
you're harming the larger community.
Yeah,
you're telling the person that it's okay for them to do that again and again and again, and they're gonna continue to do it. If they get away with it once, they're gonna continue to do it. So, yes, that might mean that you lose this free gig, if you talk back to them, but that's what you've lost, a free gig. Now, that's not to say that there aren't situations, like I've worked in situations where I've traded services for services. There was no money that traded hands, but we each got something of value and we made sure that we set it up so that the other person, what the other person was receiving was valuable. That's perfectly fine, but that's different from working for free. So that's really important. The other thing is we were talking earlier about, more and more freelancers are working as contractors within companies, within organizations. And I think the result of the economy, one of the many results of the economy taking a dump, is that companies are depending on independents more and more, but they don't always know how to treat them well. They don't know how to treat them in such a way that they remain a contractor. So it's really important for you to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to do that. I am my own boss. I am my own company. You have hired me to do a particular thing, but I'm in charge of how I work, when I work, where I work, the tools I use. That's not your responsibility.
Let me offer a couple of other wrenches. Because when somebody hires a creative person to do some work and they do it without a contract, under the copyright law, the presumption is that the work that you do when you're independent belongs to you. So when you're somebody's employee, or if you have a contract where it says it's a work for hire, then all of the work that you create belongs to the person that's paying you and hired you. When they don't have a contract, and when it's not clear, you have a copyright interest in whatever it is that you've created. Even if they've given you the materials,
right,
you do have a protectable copyright interest, and that is an opportunity to negotiate for that proper fee at the end, because I've heard too many stories where Craigslist or some other deal like that, somebody says, here's a simple job, I want you to do it, please do this work, and you'll get notoriety or fame or credit, or right, just by being associated with me, great riches will come, and it comes to the end and you expect to be paid, and they go, oh gee, I'm sorry, I'm not going to pay you. Well, my advice to that person has always been, for $35 on the Copyright Office website, register the copyright in what you've done, and then the legal presumption is that the work that you've created belongs to you. And it gives you the opportunity to use your word, negotiate a fair price, or you can prevent, or certainly throw a wrench in whatever project it is that they think they were doing for their behalf to stop it from happening.
And that's not your only recourse. There's plenty of others we'll talk about.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
But we have a caller, and the number is 503-231-8187 if you want to join the conversation. 503-231-8187. Joseph, hello. Welcome to KBOO.
Good morning. You're absolutely right about a lot of this. I've worked in the entertainment field for quite a while.
Ah, yes.
And when there's a crisis that happens, they call on the musicians to provide the entertainment for these benefits. They don't provide, you know, they don't ask for doctors. They don't ask for anybody else to do services. It always comes down to the entertainment field to, you know, we're the, you know, we're the ones who aren't making, we're, wages are stagnant pretty much.
And let me guess, they offer you the promise of future employment.
No, not really, nothing. The
free musicians
have heart, so we tend to bolster the community. You know, we're the ones who see the problems, and we're there. So we don't hesitate a lot of times. We don't have any promise. There's no promise in the music business. We laugh at that a lot of times. Like, you're going to get fed? Huh? That doesn't even happen. You know, we're very, you know, we're very skeptical about a lot of that stuff. Look at the concerts in the park. Pay is abysmal. The Waterfront Blues Festival pays abysmal. You know, instead they hire bands from all over the place. Why don't they just have all the local bands and put them on top of the heap? You know, we're the people, you know, and then that way the whole, you know, the crowds out there can see who's out there and go out in the clubs in the wintertime to see the local bands and put all the locals on stage. You know, give them the crown for the day.
Let me guess, there's also this presumption that you're really enjoying yourself, so you know you're that's kind of your payment is you're playing your music, you're doing your art, you're having a good time with your friends.
Well, you know, I have a theory about work. I like to do work that I like, and so I always try to do that, whether I'm doing my other jobs, whether I'm, you know, I also do other things in my life. I try to always enjoy myself. Playing music is a lot of hard work. People don't understand how much time you put in rehearsing, just even waiting around before you go on stage. You know, you get there way early, you leave later than everybody, you know, and it's a lot of hard work. The glory is very brief and fleeting. So that's it. Have a good morning. Well, I got to get to work.
Thank you, Joseph. Yes, you know, Katie and Cole, I think you enjoy your work from what I can tell.
I do, but I also like getting paid for it. I mean, and I think he Joseph hit on something, and you did too, that's important. We, I think, devalue work when we talk about, oh, if you do it for love and not money. Work is valuable. You're contributing something to the larger community, and that value should be recognized. There's a lot of this do what you love, and money will fall from the sky somehow, or you'll just get great enjoyment out of doing it. And that's great. It's good to enjoy what it is that you are doing. But you also deserve to be paid for it. You deserve to have that value recognized. So you need to ask for it. One of the things I tell people is at the beginning of every year, decide how many like charity events you're going to do or how many freebies you're going to give out. And then once you hit your limit, you can tell the next person who asks, I'm sorry, I only do X number of these a year and I've done two already. However, I'd love to be involved. This is my rate.
Well, I think, again, we're talking about educating the client.
Yeah.
What Joseph's saying is incredibly valid, and I think every creative person, every contractor should really go out there and say that whenever they get a chance. And, you know, and not say it in a frustrated or angry way, but just sort of in casual conversation. You know, I think a lot of the trouble that contractors run into nowadays is that they're not sharing their experience.
So absolutely.
You're hearing more and more, which is great, about the solidarity in the low-wage industries at Walmart and McDonald's. There's walkouts. And I think there needs to be solidarity in the contract industries. One of my first animation jobs, this was 20 years ago, was working at a place that you had to work, do the work at a specific place, mm-hmm. at specific hours. Mm-hmm. So, but they still called you a contractor, and you still had to pay, you know, all of your own Social Security mm-hmm. and payroll and everything like that. So they were really violating the law, and basically they were saying, "So report us."
Yeah.
And eventually, they were reported, and the Labor Department got around to it. But they just said, "Oh well, you can keep doing this, but not that." So you know, you just it really is an issue where you have to keep fighting. This is you know, there's no magic bullets in when you're not a lobbyist with a $1 billion bank account.
And you're absolutely right. We need to foster that community and share our experiences so that we're all well informed of what's going on. There's an organization in town called Makers Nation that is creating community for independent creatives, independent makers, and they're hosting.
They had a thing a couple days ago.
Yeah, the first Wednesday of every month, they're hosting a coffee clatch where you can get together and talk to other folks about work. Like, what are you interested in? What do you want to do? What are you struggling with? And I was there the other day, and it was great. We shared all sorts of really helpful information. So I encourage folks that are in town to check Makers Nation out.
Yeah, the Makers fairs are very big. ADX is mm-hmm. a great place for makers. We want to talk to Ryan. He's calling from South Korea. Is that right, Ryan? Are you on the phone? Let's see. Trying to get that phone up. And
hello.
Hi. Hello, Ryan.
No, this is Brian.
Oh, Brian. Okay.
I'm not in South Korea.
Okay.
But, you know, it might be cool to go.
Ah, yes. Well, anyway, so, you're here with Katie and Cole on Talk Radio on KBOO, and what's on your mind?
Okay, so, listen, this is kind of a subject of me that I've watched over the years, and, you know, I'm 55, but I go all the way back to, you know, songs being sold for a couple $100 and millions made off of them, you know, and, you know, the bottom line, and I've been in the music field, you know, and you know, the bottom line goes, you know, this is just the free market, and I think the consumer should realize that when things are paid cheaply, you know, it's like our school system and our, you know, our public services, when things are put up for the lowest bid and done, you know, with coercion and, you know, whatever graft, hey, look, you're not going to get a great product. And I think our music, you know, and our art has actually gone downhill in quality over the years. You know, there is some great art and there is money being paid for good art, but, you know, the lack of quality that we have in a lot of places is, if you're not going to pay anybody anything, and this is what our economy has come down to, where it's all about money, what kind of product are you going to get? And you know, that's, I think as consumers, we all need to think about that. And, you know, when an artist isn't even allowed to make a living, you know, because they're supposed to work for free. And that's corporate capitalism, is get everything for free and make a lot of money out of it.
So what's been your strategy for making your way in this kind of environment?
Well, you know, unfortunately and fortunately, I'm not an artist. You know, I worked with musicians, and I used to work on guitars, which I was an apprentice luthier. Mm-hmm. I just would encourage them. You know, I would say, you know, look, you know, you need to get what you're worth. And I always push people over to the European model. And, you know, I say, you know, there's guilds, there's unions, you know, I mean, there has to be a set price. And, I mean, the only thing I can be is a verbal encouragement. But, you know, real quick, I know you guys got a lot of people lined up, but, you know, there was a gentleman back in Tampa in the 80s by the name of Eddie Kirkland, who died a few years ago. But he was actually one of the last Chicago blues guys, you know, affiliated with John Lee Hooker and Muddy Waters. And he was literally playing at a club I worked at for $50 a night. Mm. This was in the 80s. That was cheap back then, even, you know. And a lot of guys, he used to come in my store, and I'd give him free strings and fix his guitars for nothing. And, you know, finally, you know, the blues guys got together in Sarasota, and they brought him on tour with him in Europe. And he went from $50,000 a night to, like, $500 and $1,000. And, you know, it was really sad, you know, because, I mean, he was in his late 50s by the time he realized he could make money. And he made money over in Europe and not in the United States. So, you know, that's just...
Well, no, thanks for... Oh, did we lose Brian?
Did you lose me?
Oh, no, there you are. There you are.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Yeah, that reminds me, a couple of years ago at the jazz festival here in Portland, there was a focus on Norwegian jazz, and there were all these great avant-garde musicians from Norway. It had become this enormous breakout jazz scene, and part of the reason for that was they took all of their oil money, you know, and they've been raking in just huge amounts of oil money over the past few decades, but they took it all and they invested it in education and culture and social needs in their country.
That was the country, not the musicians.
Right, right. So that's what's happened since then, is they've gotten all these great, highly educated people who are well-paid artists, and they can actually pay the rents. You know, in the 80s in Chicago, you might have been able to get a $300 a month apartment. You can't anymore unless you're, you know, out in living on top of a slag heap somewhere. If somebody, you know, one of the things I've heard is, hey, can you do this job for free? Hey, can you pay my rent for free?
Yeah.
You know. Ryan, I guess, is on the line. Ryan, 503-231-8187 is the number to call to talk with Katie and Cole about artists, rights, responsibilities, and other non-traditional workers. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. How are you?
Hi.
Now, I'm the one calling from South Korea.
Oh, you are. Okay, there you are. How you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm the guy that actually runs the Twitter account you mentioned earlier.
Oh, fantastic. Ryan Estrada. Nice. How are you?
I'm doing good. I run a Twitter account called For Exposure Text, and so I read these ads all day. I literally go to every board and search for all of these, and it's just shocking how much of it there is out there. Like,
yeah, you find the humor in it.
There's literally a buffer of 2 years.
You find the humor in it, but you know, it's also galling. It's grating that there are so many of these out there.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recognize any themes in what you're seeing, Ryan, or is it just Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a lot of repeats. There's a lot of them that I get to. I'm like, have I quoted this one yet, or is it just the same one over and over again? But yeah, you get a lot of like kind of guilt tripping people. You get a lot of just people that are convinced that, you know, their thing is going to be the biggest thing in the world. People that have done no research. Like, you'll see people like, yeah, as soon as you get picked up by Disney, I'll be able to pay you. Like, that's not how it works. You can't just write the first thing you've ever written and get a deal at Disney. But yeah, it's not what people think, but what I've found as an artist is just, instead of arguing about it, if you're just very confident about how you work, and like if someone asked me to do something for free, I'd just say, well, here's my rates. I don't even argue I don't work for free. I just say, well, here's the rates. If they want to say I'll pay you afterward, I say, no, I take payment up front. And as long as I'm confident about it,
yeah.
People, they don't tend to argue. They just say, okay, they either say, great, let's do it that way, or I can't afford that, and they go to someone else.
Now, do you have a website with your own personal work? People can look at what you've been doing?
Yep, they can go to ryanestrada.com.
And so how'd you end up in South Korea? Are you there temporarily or hanging out for a little while? What's the story?
Well, since I work as a cartoonist through the internet, I can live wherever I want, and I was for a long time moving to a new country every year. But I've been sticking around Korea for a few years since I just got married here. But
congratulations.
It's nice being able to work from anywhere.
And by the way, on that note, I'm going to say, Katie, if you don't mind my saying so, mm-hmm. You are married to a rising star in the local comic scene, Dylan McConis.
I am indeed.
Whose work you can see on workmadeforhire.net. And Dylan has been a guest on KBOO. And may I say to you, congratulations on having your union legally recognized in the state of Oregon.
Thank you very much.
Legal recognition may not always be the be-all and end-all, but in this case, it's pretty important.
It was pretty darn cool.
And marriage is a multi-party contract. it's you two people and the feds in the state. You know, you've got a lot of benefits.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'm one of the only lawyers with an in-house cartoonist, and she might be one of the only cartoonists with an in-house lawyer.
Well, Ryan, thank you so much for calling this morning.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. So you are listening to Friday morning, Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm SW Concert filling in today for Lynn and Ani, and my guests here in the studio are Cole Haver and Katie Lane. We're going to take a couple more calls at 503-231-8187. But first, Cole's brought a little piece of music that we'd like to play.
Set up hip hop, the hipping to the hip hip hop. You don't stop the rocket to the bang bang. Up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the hooking the beat. Now what you hear is not a test. I'm rapping to the beat. And me, the groove, and my friends are gonna try to groove your feet. See, I am Wonder Mike, and I'd like to say hello to the black, to the white, the red, and the brown, the purple, and yellow. But first, I gotta bang, bang, the boogie, so the boogie say, up, jump, the boogie, so the bang, bang, boogie, let's rock. You don't stop, rock the rhythm that will make your body rock. Well, so far, you've heard my voice, but I brought two friends along. And next on the mic is my man, Hank. Come on, Hank, sing that song.
Check it out. I'm the C-A-S-M-D-O-V, and the rest is F-L-Y. You see, I go by the code of the doctor of the mix, and these reasons I'll tell you why. You see, I'm 6'1", and it turns up on a nightdress to a teen. You see, I got more clothes than Muhammad Ali, and I dress so viciously. Everybody go hotel, motel. What you gonna do today?
Say what?
Because I'm a headline girl, and I get some spanky drive off, and the death OJ. Everybody go hotel, motel, holiday in. Say, if your girl starts acting up, then you take her friend.
Okay, yeah. So that song we just heard is actually a video, one that you can see on the web, and it's a fine example of fair use. Cole, what can you tell us about it?
I would say that was one of the new hits from rap superstar Brian Williams,
who you might know,
NBC News anchor, who's got quite a career in the hip-hop range now. You can catch his videos, a part of the Jimmy Fallon show. And they do some really brilliant work slicing and dicing his news reporting and laying it over some transformative ways for your enjoyment.
Yeah, there are a couple of hundred cuts in there if you look at the video. And those are some old school rhymes, by the way, from the Sugar Hill Gang, mm-hmm. delivered by Brian Williams and Lester Holt with Kathy Lee. But that is something that you can do with material that's already out there on the TV and make it legal by transforming it in some way, making it something new and creative. And we have a couple of callers on the line we want to get to. The number is 503-231-8187. We are in the studio with Katie Lane and Cole Haver, both attorneys who work with artists and other non-traditional workers. And we've got Harry on the line. Is that right? Mitch. Mitch is on the line first. Hello, Mitch.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to commend you for having the guts to take this up over community radio, which is itself a business model built on the very principle of working for free and adding value to other people's work without getting any compensation yourself. So can you talk about that irony?
Well, I'm a volunteer doing this little business because I can walk away anytime, which is nice. I'm not under contract here. But I love getting the word out into the community, and I love the fact that I can talk about anything I want to talk about. The people here at the station who are playing records get to play their own records. About the only thing we're restricted by is what the FCC tells us we can and can't say. But other than that, it's just something where we love connecting with the community. And local guests like these that used to be on commercial radio or even public radio 10 or 20 years ago, now it's really only this one outlet that you get to hear these voices and you get to interact with the public, and I love that.
Oh, you don't have to sell me on the value of community radio. I'm asking you about the irony of being in the position of supporting an institution as I do. I've done my whole life, that helps build careers in the commercial marketplace. And then when KBOO needs to raise money, are any of the rock stars who got their first exposure on KBOO contributing or writing big checks to keep KBOO on the air? Because community radio lurches from crisis to crisis while the marketplace is thriving with people who began their careers in it.
Well, it's pretty rare. There are some cool people. I will say that Amy Goodman comes through town every year or two and does a benefit for us, signs books, and contributes a lot of time, works her tail to the bone. I can name a couple of other people. But you're right. A lot of people go on. You know, a lot of people get a ladder out of the community, and they go on, and they kind of forget their roots. And that's an issue that's, well, it may be an issue of karma. What can I say?
I think here's the painful thing, if I can get 1 second to slip in my own experience. For about 25 years, I wrote for a magazine called Dirty Linen on the East Coast. Which
I know Dirty Linen, yes.
Yeah, and they were publishing reviews about regional music and reviews about live music, and they never had the money to pay, even though they were selling advertising. It wasn't a business model that was successful enough, and it wasn't valued enough by the very artists who had their work added value to by being reviewed and getting publicity. And what we found with the death of publishing is that so much of that independent music circuit has gone away because there was never any value to the people who were publicizing it for free. But it wasn't just the people who were publicizing it for free, because a lot of the artists that work that circuit, they might not have gotten paid what a rock star with an agent got paid, but working the circuit of church basements and community centers and Grange halls around the country afforded them the ability to make that their full-time work. And some of them valued the publication and advertised in it and supported it and took it on the road with them and sold it with their gig recordings and stuff. But most took it for granted. And I think we who do the work for free are in the position of constantly being taken for granted. And that's why I'm not attacking you for the irony of dealing with this subject over community radio. I'm more trying to tease out the internal contradictions of working at something you love, in which the marketplace really belongs to those who are the most selfish, but it functions on the backs of those who are the most selfless.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and I think being taken for granted is more than just a financial thing, too. So that's something to think about. You know, in our society, what's going on? I mean, are people being... saw a quote the other day that said that things are to be used and people are to be loved. And the problem is when things get loved and people get used.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So thanks for your comment very much.
And thank you for the high level of discussion.
Oh, you're welcome. Let's talk to Harry real quick. Harry, are you on the line still? Hello. Might not have. I think we lost Harry here. I want to tell a fun part, a little fun story about an artist that I just found on the Daily Coast the other day. This is in Canada. It's an Alberta artist named Peter Van Tiesenhausen. And it says here that he effectively stopped corporations from putting a pipeline through his 800-acre property by covering it with artwork and copywriting the top 6 inches of his land as an artwork. It turns out that apparently in Canada, mining companies can legitimately lay claim to any land underneath private property to a depth of 6 inches. In doing this artwork and this copywriting, he raised the value of this land so high that they didn't want to dig because they would have had to pay him a huge amount to dig through his artwork. And this is just a great example to me of an artist, taking knowledge. Knowledge is power. And turning it against the folks who always seem to have, you know, the best stable of lawyers, the best stable of materials at their hands, you know, always seem to get the upper hand. Cole, have you heard about the story?
I'm just really stuck on the Canadian 6-inch mining theory. That's I am not going to touch this. Oh yeah, you're right. Good. I'm sure that's all true.
And here's the best part. Whenever the business consultants call him up, he charges them $500 an hour to talk to him. So their conversations tend to be very short and sweet. So no harassing phone calls.
I'm sure he's collecting all of that.
Yes.
Okay, we got Harry on the line. Yes. Harry, welcome to KBOO. Hi, good morning. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Thank you for taking my call. You mentioned earlier about copyright laws. What about artists using registered trademarks on their items?
I think I'll let Cole take this one.
What about artists using registered trademarks on their items?
Harry, can you be a bit more specific? What are you thinking of using yourself? I mean, do you have a creation, a character, a book?
Jewelry, and maybe even artwork as in paintings.
Oh, so are you talking about incorporating somebody else's trademark into the work?
Are these your trademarks or are these somebody else's trademarks?
No, this would be my trademark. Can I trademark, let's say if I make a bunch of small statues, can I trademark all these statues?
If you are selling goods and you have a name or a logo that you want to use for your goods or services, then that's your trademark. Your name would be no different than McDonald's or Coca-Cola or, but I have a feeling that's not really what you're asking me.
I'm wondering if this reminds me of a case that came up recently. There is a company that's putting out sort of tchotchkes and ornaments that a bunch of artists who are on the Etsy circuit are suing this guy because they created these ornaments themselves. And this guy is using essentially the same design in his, selling them for more. And they sued him saying, the way these look is something that we've created. And these are so substantially similar that you cannot just look at our stuff, copy it, and make more money off of it because you have a name that you get out to more people, you know, and to more places.
Okay. Boy, that's pretty complicated.
Yeah, it is a pretty complicated case. It's going through the courts, you know, in a bunch of different cases. I think it's a class action suit. And now, I should see if I can find the actual name of it and call it.
Does KBOO have the video component for this radio station? so we can flip and show people some of these pictures?
Right. No, I can see if I can call this up. But, you know, but statuettes, for example. Now, how can Harry... you know, can he take pictures of his statues, of his jewelry? Can he, you know, somehow copyright the look of them in some way?
Well, if it's, you can copyright a statue, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't need to take a picture of it.
You already have a copyright in it. If you want to register the copyright, which I would recommend, that helps prevent other people, it helps perfect your ownership in it. Photograph them and send those images off to the copyright office. You can photograph all your statuettes at one time, but I'm still not sure if that's really the question you're asking.
I think that's what it was. Making sure that if I create something that I can and call it a name, or could I just put on the side of the statue registered trademark?
Well, you don't want to put the registration symbol on the circle R. You're not allowed to use that unless you have registered it with the trademark office. But you are allowed to put the little superscript TM. That's absolutely permissible. So it shows the world that you are claiming a trademark interest in the name that you're using or the art that you're using connected with your service or business.
You said PM?
T.
TM,
TM, like trademark, or SM for service mark if you're casting.
One of the things to remember about trademark and copyright, protects you from other people copying your work. Trademark is really there to protect the consumer so that when the consumer sees the mark, they know who created that thing. And that benefits them in that if they like it, they can buy more of it. If they don't like it, they know who they can complain to. But trademark is really more about protecting the consumer. And then you have to, if you have a trademark, you have to make sure that nobody else is using it so that the consumer could potentially get confused and accidentally buy a product or a good from somebody else. So it's really, when we're talking about art, copyright is... It is more applicable and it's easier to enforce and it's generally more helpful.
But Do you have, if you're an artist, your trademark might be in your name. So if it's art right. by, and I'll pick on you, Harry. So when you sign Harry and any artwork that is out there with the name Harry with your signature, you have a trademark in it. And trademark is very, very, very old law. And it does, it's so consumers of it, if they want to buy Harry art, I just couldn't resist that, that if somebody wants some Harry art and somebody else wants Harry art, that when you have Harry on the artwork, that they know that they're getting original Harry art and not some fake Harry art. And that is probably old English law, hundreds of years old. That's
going back to Runnymede.
Mm-hmm. Yes, common law trademark. Now, there is statewide, federal trademarks are expensive and a little complicated to do through the trademark office. There is state trademark protection as well, which is very good law. Every state has their own. In Oregon, you can find the way to register your state trademark under the filinginoregon.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the Secretary of State's office.
Secretary of State's office. It's a pretty easy form to fill out. And the idea is they want customers, consumers, to be clear that they're getting work or products from the original guy.
Okay, thank you very much.
You bet. And so, Katie, can you tell us again about that organization here in Oregon that helps out artists with legal advice and a consultation?
Oregon Volunteer Lawyers for the Arts. OregonVLA.org is where you can find out more information about them. They are holding clinics, free legal clinics, about once a month. You have to apply. And you have to meet certain income restrictions. It's under $40,000 for an individual, under a $100,000 budget for a nonprofit. But you can...
The application is right online. And we just launched this website probably
about a month ago.
Just in the last month. And I think we have some openings still in the June 20th.
June 20th is the next clinic.
The next clinic.
Yeah, so if... Somebody like Harry, who has a question about how do I best protect my work? What are the things that I need to go through in order to ensure that I'm protecting my work? Those are great questions for the clinic. It's a 45-minute session with an attorney. It's a $20 administrative fee. The idea is that we want to empower more artists to have access to the legal resources that they need to not only protect their work, but to make their businesses grow and be successful.
Exactly. Maybe they'll become well-paid artists who can then create more well-paid lawyers.
I like it.
Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 this morning on APA Compass, award-winning author Chang Ray Lee describes his Asian American heaven and his latest novel, On Such a Full Sea. And Marie V. Sullivan explores the Filipina immigrant experience in her novel, The Mango Bride. At 10, Air Cascadia is off today. We'll go straight to Flashpoints, which looks at how the corporate press grossly misreports the situation in the Ukraine. We'll hear about Expose Facts, a new whistleblower support group, and we hear from the Electronic Intifada with Nora Barrows Freeman. At 11 on It Takes a Village, Shahid Hamid hosts a tribute to the late, great Portland musician Janice Scroggins. And at 11:30 on the Radio Zine, we speak with James Haslam, Executive Director of the Vermont Workers Center, about their Healthcare is a Human Rights campaign. So thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support for community radio. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. That's kboo.fm. Well, folks, you've been listening to Positively Revolting Talk Radio on KBOO. I'm your host today, S.W. Conser, filling in for Lynn and Ani. And our guests today, live in the studio, have been Katie Lane and Cole Haver. Katie and Cole, could you give us some information where people can go to read more of your advice, more about what you do?
Sure thing. I have a blog, workmadeforhire.net, that focuses on providing negotiation advice for freelancers and artists, publishes every Tuesday. And I also am fairly active on Twitter.
You are.
My username is @_Katie, K-A-T-I-E, _Lane, L-A-N-E.
And my Twitter name is ArtCop, @ArtCop. I just have a copyright law fetish, so mostly I talk about all the really interesting things that you really want to know about.
Well, we're going to go out with one of your favorite musical groups. They're Negative Land. And thanks, both of you, for joining us today. We should do this again sometime.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
And thanks to all our listeners on the radio dial and on the web. This show will be available later today on the archive page, kboo.fm/positivelyrevolting. You can become a Facebook fan at Positively Revolting or follow the show on Twitter at Positive Revolt. Now stay tuned for the Friday morning radio zine on your grassroots media outlet, KBOO.
That fly with bright copper wings. These are a few of my favorite things. The dog bites, the bee stings. I simply remember my favorite things, and then I feel so that sting on colored girls tied up with blue satin sashes, wild brown girls tied up in warm strings, wild white girls that melt into nose cream. These are a few of my favorite things.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor the Creative Music Guild's 3rd annual Improvisation Summit of Portland. This year's Improvisation Summit brings together creative and adventurous musicians, dancers, and improvisers for a weekend of diverse and unique performances. Featured artists include Tim Byrne, Bad Luck, Scott Kutchell, The Rich Halley Quartet, Ken Ollis and Senses Sharpened, Michael Sterling, Doug Terrio, Matt Carlson, John Gross, and many more. The 3rd Annual Improvisation Summit takes place June 6th and 7th at Sandbox Studios, located at 420 Northeast 9th in Portland. Additionally, the Creative Music Guild will screen the film Reach of Resonance on June 5th at the Portland Art Museum's Witzel Auditorium. For more information and tickets, go to creativemusicguild.org.
KBOO is proud to co-sponsor Tryon Life Community Farms Bloom Festival on Sunday, June 8th from 2 until 10 p.m. Bloom Festival is filled with live music, activities, local organic food, and performances at the TLC Farm next to the Tryon Creek State Forest, featuring live music by Soul Nectar, Selkies and Cedars, The Dirty Dandelions, Serotone, DJ Carola, Mariachi, and many others.